All this week, we're meeting some of this year's so-called MacArthur Genius Grant winners. And honor you can't seek. They have to find you doing work that could use attention and a $625,000 grant. Today, Professor Sophia Noble, who studies internet bias and how simple search engines like Google or Yahoo exacerbate racism and bias against women. She's founder and co-director of UCLA's brand new Center for Critical Internet Inquiry. So first, Professor, congratulations.
Thank you.
What's it like to get that call?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's kind of a funny story because I kept getting this call from a Chicago phone number, and I thought it was like a robocall. So I just kept declining it for a week. And finally, I picked it up, and I got the news, and I burst into tears. There have been so many people of color and women and LGBTQ people for the last, you know, decade or more who have been trying to talk and warn, and that there are so many dangerous dimensions of the internet and so many harmful things happening. And for many of us, I think it's felt like we were screaming into the wind until the 2016 presidential election happened. And then people started to learn about Cambridge Analytica and all kinds of other breaches. And then it became apparent, hey, hold on, we've got to do something.
Cambridge Analytica, the Steve Bannon-related company that used these search engines to sort of manipulate people's thinking, if I can put it that simply?
Yeah, that's a really accurate description. But I would say that there are many technologies that surveil us, collect data about us to manipulate us or to kind of steer us in particular ways, or really to foreclose opportunities from us. You know, we think of it as some of the most important public interest civil rights work there is when it comes to the internet.
Okay, well, let's talk about what you do. You look at internet search engines, Google, for example, to see how the way the algorithms are set up exacerbate racist stereotypes, bias against women. Explain what you mean by that.
Okay, so an algorithm is really a set of instructions that you give to a computer. Most of the algorithms that we engage with every day, we have no idea what the instructions are that are being given to that computer. One of the things that I started looking at a decade ago was the way in which there was so much racial bias and kind of sexism when you did certain types of searches. Many women know this experience where you're looking for something and you use the word girl or girls and you get hit with a page full of pornography. I started systematically looking at that about 10 years ago, and I saw that over and over again, there were just a number of racist stereotypes and sexism, and it was baked into the way the algorithm sorted information on the web. And you have to remember, 10 years ago, when I made an argument like that, people would say, Sophia, that is impossible because algorithms are just math and math can't be racist. But of course, that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is the application of mathematical formulas to hundreds of millions of possible queries that could happen on the internet, and then choosing and bringing up the worst of all possible items that you might find on the web. That was a novel idea a decade ago. It's not novel now.
Well, hold up a second. Let's be more direct about that. A lot of people do assume that the algorithm is just because it takes the most searches that people do, and if the most searches under those words happen to be pornography, that's what you're going to get. Is it like, you know, we've met the enemy and it is us?
Well, you know, when I wrote this book, Algorithms of Oppression, I really tried to unpack these popular myths. You know, one popular myth is that the things we get back on the first page of search results are purely what's most popular. Doing searches on Black girls and Latina girls and Asian girls were searches that I studied for years. And, you know, you didn't have to add the word sex and you didn't have to add the word porn. Girls of color were synonymous with pornography. Mm. And so that begs the question, well, are girls of color subject to the tyranny of the most popular, right, of the majority? Mm. I mean, they're a small minority of the population relative to the whole. So they have no agency and control as a community, as individuals, over being represented pornographically. And so the second kind of myth that I try to unpack is, like, how do we get these results? And how does something like search engine optimization work? What does it mean when the porn industry or any other industry has the resources to outspend and out-optimize keywords that belong to people and communities that have already faced a long history of racist and sexist misrepresentation in popular culture?
So there, I just heard the word spend. The pornographic industry also somehow invests in manipulating the search engines.
Well, I think this is really the crux of it, which is that search engines are advertising platforms. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I think the public doesn't widely understand. They think of these, a search engine, as like a fact checker or a knowledge space. Well, for certain types of banal information, it can be reliable. You know, what time does a coffee shop open or close? But when you start asking complex social questions about people, history, these are nuanced kinds of queries that are actually being put into an advertising engine, which means those who have the most money to pay are going to be more visible. Mm. And I think that's a really important breakthrough idea that we need to help the public understand. The problem in some cases is that people don't always know when they're encountering that, and they trust large-scale search engines like Google as an authority.
There has been a call to do something about this. What you think that is, I want to get to, but there are real-world consequences. You know, blaming Asian Americans for the coronavirus. Dylann Roof, right, killing members of a black church. He was going to white nationalist websites. He was getting this information when he searched. What do you suggest should be done?
Well, you know, the case of Dylann Roof is such a painful case because what Dylann Roof said in his own words was that he was trying to understand the media coverage of Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. You know, Trayvon Martin's murder was like the catalyst that ignited the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think so much about what does it mean when people go to the web to kind of make sense of something that they don't understand. And when Dylann Roof did those searches trying to understand who was Trayvon Martin and who was George Zimmerman, he did very quickly fall down a rabbit hole of white supremacist and white nationalist websites, anti-Black, anti-Semitic. And he, in his own words, said that he self-educated and became racially aware and right-wing radicalized. And I think the question is, why do we only have kind of one monopoly in the country that we engage with for the go-to for everything? Again, search has its place, but it should stay in a more narrow lane and not take up kind of the whole imaginary about where we find knowledge.
So sort of break the hold that the Google or you know, the one or two other search engines have on us by somehow forming other paths. But for now, can this be regulated? Can somebody stop Dylann Roof putting in Trayvon Martin and somehow break the connection so that he doesn't get supremacist sites?
Well, we certainly, I think, could regulate search engines such that they cannot gather and collect so much information about us and then use that information over time to kind of start to steer us toward certain types of content. We need greater protection around what these companies can know about us, because I think part of it is once you've expressed a certain kind of interest in things, then start to get more and more of that thing. You know, if we understood that Google was an advertising platform and we had other kinds of search engines that we understood to be, let's say, curated by librarians, teachers, experts, we could differentiate more so that when we have certain kinds of queries, maybe they take longer to be answered instead of an instant answer, more like the, you know, the difference between fast food and organic slow food.
Just briefly, have you ever talked to Mark Zuckerberg or other executives?
I have not spoken to Mark Zuckerberg or the leaders of Google. Most people who work at Google are under an NDA and aren't in a position to speak to me. But I am aware that many people there read my work.
That's UCLA professor Safiya Noble, winner of one of this year's MacArthur grants for her work on the internet and how it magnifies and worsens racial bias, gender stereotypes. Safia, Professor, thank you so much, and congratulations again.
Thanks so much, Robin.